Hello, my good man. My boys and I were in the neighborhood and we thought to treat ourselves to a day of sport with other gentlemen.
Hi-ho, perhaps there will be bear baiting?
I'm wearing a top hat.
Gentlemen, I'm gonna need to see some IDs.
Well, of course.
Yes, sir. Usual wallet.
Oh, there we go.
Made of diamonds, I suppose.
Yes. The Velcro will do.
There we go.
Okay. A library card. A school ID.
Da-da-da.
And a folded up tracing of a hammerhead shark.
Correct.
Y'all got any money?
Me and my colleagues are positively abreast with currency.
Go ahead.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait to bear bait.
I hear the mink is very good here.
Oh, the mink. I love mink.
England.
This is Douglas.
Yeah, Damon's missing again. Yeah, when I spoke to Damon earlier today, he mentioned a lot of regret that he had from missing that episode we did with Hatter.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually crying, I believe. Even though we were only IMing. I knew he was crying inside. But he says he officially has GT5. He's officially told me.
Oh, okay. Okay,
so
great.
I guess we can write him off until next year.
At least.
So, that's what's up with Damien. We're back. Douglas, what have you been up to?
Well, this morning I woke up.
Don't tell me you took a poop.
I wasn't, but I did. Then I watched some TV. Then I had some lunch. Then I watched some more TV. And then...
I told you, this is why we have the greatest audience in the world. Anyways, Douglas, I guess we can get on with what we're here to do.
I suppose we can.
Because I just wanted to end that joke quickly.
Okay.
What have we been watching this week?
What have we been watching?
Douglas,
that's a good question. Well, what have I been watching? This week, I actually watched quite a bit. So, I saw a movie that you talked about last week, which is Cyrus. What?
None.
Nothing? You're about to say something.
Alright, I was just going to say that I talked about it last week, but you guys will never hear that.
What happened?
It's just not going to go. Okay, just leave it there.
You fucked it up!
I fucked it up. But anyways.
So yes.
Cyrus, one of my favorite movies this
Shit,
year.
Shit, that means all my wonderful movies that I watched, they're just deleted.
Yes, they are.
Oh my goodness.
You didn't watch them anymore.
I didn't watch them.
You have to watch them again to come and talk about them again in order for us to claim that you watched them.
Damn. Okay. So,
Cyrus.
Andrew, you said last week, mysteriously, that that you weren't sure if it was great. You thought it was okay, but it could step up to be great if, you know, on maybe a second watching.
I didn't make it look warm, but yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Like, it definitely is in the top 10, just I'm not sure where right now.
I disagree. Well... Okay, based on what you just said a while ago, no, I don't disagree. But I disagree with your saying that, you know, this might be great if you watched it again. No, this is a great movie, definitely. It is top 10 material. It has the best pickup line ever created by man. And for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, just watch the first 5 minutes of the movie, and all will be revealed. I also watched, I finally finished watching Un Prophet.
That we reviewed on this podcast.
That we did.
Like, I didn't finish the movie.
I watched the first hour. Well, guess what? I got to watch the second hour, thanks to unemployment. And the movie was all that, and then some, and it was wonderful. And that's some more top 10 material.
Do you think it compares to The Godfather that Damien was hyping it up to be when we were talking about it?
I think there are parallels. We follow...
No, I'm not talking about the story.
Oh, the story.
I'm talking about in your level of how awesome the movie is.
Because
we know it's a mob film and there are parallels and... No, I'm talking about its level of awesomeness.
I think I could be swayed, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
The Godfather really holds a special place in my heart. I did adore that movie when I first saw it. And yes, this movie is fantastic. Is it as good as The Godfather? I don't know. That's the type of question you answer after having watched both films. Well, I have watched The Godfather many times, but having watched Un Prophet quite a few times as well, you have to kind of, you know, feel, I don't know. You can't just watch it once and be like, oh, that's fantastic. That is The Godfather,
how
I don't think.
How did you like the language in the film? And by the language, I mean the fact that in the film, and I remember this when I spoke about it during the review, I had noticed there were certain scenes, especially where they would switch languages really easily. And because we're just reading subtitles.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm watching these films, sometimes, even though I do pay attention to the dialogue, sometimes it starts to blur in my mind.
Well,
And they switch between languages so easily in the film. And you can see it on the faces of some of the characters where they'll start to get confused because... the conversation will become a subset of the room.
Yeah, actually, there was one specific scene that I think you might be talking about where he was, the main character was trying to convey something to another person without having the rest of the people in the room know. And yes, that was, actually, that does get a little bit confusing. Because, like you're saying, for me and you,
we're just reading
subtitles, and sometimes you kind of just zone out on the not necessarily the audio, but the language part of the audio,
yeah.
And you don't really think about it. And then when you're watching, you're reading these things, you're just kind of like, but I don't understand. Why would you say that? Doesn't make any sense to me. So maybe they should have put in some cues there. But it's. You could notice it every once in a while. I noticed it, you know, it got, when the language got a little bit more nasal, you're like, oh, wait, he switched from French. Or whatever language they were talking before. I think it was French. Was it French?
There are lots of languages in there's Arabic, that's a language. I'm mixing it up with something. I'm going to be quiet before I say anything more. There's French, there's Italian, there are like two other languages, but I can't remember because I haven't seen that film since we reviewed it on the podcast. I actually want to rewatch that film.
Yeah, that movie is pretty fantastic. Definitely one of the best of the year.
In my mind, yeah. It's
I don't know if I would give it, you know, the close to one of the best of all time, which is where The Godfather kind of is. But I think on further viewings, possibly it could get there.
What I really liked about it was the way it portrays prison. And prison in Europe, because I remember reading a lot of stories of people in prison in Europe and how they would get furloughs, the weekends out and stuff, and I just couldn't believe it. And then to see it in this story as to how these people are running the prison more or less, and how the prison society works, and not so much like there's a guy who's connected, so he's the guy who you don't mess with kind of thing, but The way they move around in the prison, like, it feels more like the guards are just supervisors, just sitting down and making sure they don't touch the final door at the end.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, I'm talking too much. What have you been watching?
I watched... Okay, so, in my search of the top 10 of 2010. Ooh, that has a ring to it. I watched a movie that...
Next year, you're going to be screwed.
I know. Shit, top 10 of 2011. Maybe I'm just going to... We're just going to have to pull a... Exactly. We're going to have to pull a Spinal Tap and just crank it up to 11. Yes, I know the IMDb score. Yes, I think that's hilarious.
So for anyone who's in front of their computer listening to this and going like, what are you talking about? Tell me what you're talking about. Apparently on IMDb, they changed... On IMDb, every movie is rated out of 10. And for This is Spinal Tap, the famed Rob Reiner mockumentary, they decided now that they are going to rate that film out of 11. And if you've ever seen the film, you know there's this epic scene in which, I can't remember which character, one of the guys from the band shows off his amplifier collection, and then he shows off this one amplifier that he found where it cranks up to 11.
Yeah.
So when he needs that extra rocker, that extra... you know, oomph in his sound, he can just go from 10 to 11, unlike any other band out there. But anyways, you were talking.
So in my search for the top 10 of 2010, I came across this movie that I was certain would be number one.
You're hoping.
I was certain. But for some reason, it wasn't. It was The Sorcerer's Apprentice. No, I really enjoy that movie, to tell you the truth. What, you didn't like the hype?
Something else.
Oh, I'm gonna talk about that. Don't worry. This was a joke. Anyway, whatever. But no, The Sorcerer's Apprentice, one of the very few very good Nicolas Cage movies in the past, say, 10 years, I believe. Few implies more than one. Okay, yes, Kick-Ass is another one.
two in 1 year, I say that's a good run right there.
Ask him about the last 9.
I consider this, you know, like he had just hit, last year he had hit the bottom. Well, not last year, but a few years back he had hit the bottom of the bell curve, and now he's on the way up.
I hope
he had Bad Lieutenant. And
no, stop. Stop right there.
He was awesome in that movie.
No acting job in the world can save that movie. I don't care if you want to tell me whether he was good or bad. You know how I know that movie was horrible? I don't remember anything about it. And I saw all of that movie. I don't remember anything. It was so funny. Somebody started talking to me about it like a while back. And I was like, no, I don't remember that scene. No, I don't remember that. I've blacked out my experiences from watching that movie. All I remember is Val Kilmer is in it as well, and I was very upset. Because Val Kilmer is awesome. And that movie was not.
Anyways.
Alright, so what else have I watched? So the real movie, the real search for 2010 that got full-on disappointment, is a movie by a man that... I love to death, Ryan Gosling, his latest movie, All Good Things.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, this is one of those times, just like you and Nicolas Cage and Bad Lieutenant, Ryan Gosling really gave a great performance. In every scene, it was pretty, pretty stellar. But it couldn't really... It didn't really do much in way of making this film entertaining. And that was kind of sad. It was kind of just long and drawn out, and we all knew what was going to happen, kind of, from the get-go, or what type of movie this was going to be. Even though I hoped it wasn't. But it ended up being that. Very sad. And I think that's... essentially it. I suppose I could say I saw The American, which was an okay film, and I saw I Love You, Philip Morris, which was another okay film.
Philip Morris, you see, I agree with you, it's an okay film, but at the same time there's so many things that stand out about it that I really like.
Oh, me too. I love Jim Carrey, his role, and his acting performance. It was really good. I love his just the way that he is, his character is such an ingenious person in the context that we are given, or that he is presented to us from, and that's just, I love that.
But what I really like about that movie is how it kind of effortlessly switches between comedy and drama. Because, I mean, there are definitely scenes, and you see it in the trailer, that it is going all out for the Jim Carrey slapstick comedy that we all know and love from Ace Ventura, right? He's a con artist, and he's doing all these things, and he's gay, and when it goes gay, it goes ridiculously gay, in that you see shots of Jim Carrey with his boyfriend, and he has two more or less twin dogs, and they're connected by the, and it go like you just want to laugh at it, even though for no reason. But then immediately when it gets serious, because I mean it does tackle the topic of AIDS during the film, like you stop to think about it, and especially because this is a true story.
That's what they say, but really, I don't believe them.
No,
this guy cannot exist. He is not. No,
he's really still in prison right now.
What?
There was an interview that our friend Marco did, and it's posted on G-Man Reviews. You can find it there, where he spoke to both Ewan and Jim Carrey, and they were asked about whether they had actually gotten to meet their characters, and Jim didn't, but Ewan.
They don't let him out anymore.
But Ewan met his character, and you know, it was a thing, and they all definitely, these guys exist, these are real people, and I kind of want to believe that the funny bits, the ridiculous Jim Carrey style that was introduced into the character of, I can't remember his name right now, Stuart is his name?
Maybe, I can't remember, to tell you the truth.
Because we know Ewan McGregor is Philip Morris. and Jim Carrey plays the con man who falls in love with him. But it's, I believe that all of the Jim Carrey ridiculousness was inserted. Everything else is pretty much real.
Yeah. Fair enough.
And I mean, it's another interesting prison movie. Because
my word is my motherfucking bond. I'm sorry. I didn't think you were going to say it. And then as I started saying it, I was like, damn it, I hear Andrew.
Little bitch. Anyways, anything else you want to mention?
No, I'm all through. I'm sure there are a couple of good movies from last week, but I can't remember anything really. And I don't save shit like you. So, bastard.
Save shit like me?
You have this long list that you keep in a text file on your computer of the movies that you have watched since, I'm sure, 2007. Do you still have those? I bet you do. Exactly. What the hell?
I can't remember when I actually started doing that. I just felt it was useful to keep a text file. I just keep it up every time I watch a film for the first time. So anyways, this week I have seen... Alright, so you took Philip Morris from me. Yes, that's all you really took from me. I saw... Let's get the classics, the non-2010 movies out of the way. I watched White Nights as well as The Red Shoes. You know, it's kind of complimentary dance movies. White Nights is a film starring Baryshnikov, the famed Russian ballet dancer, and Gregory Hines. And they are in Russia, and they want to get out. I guess that's the easiest way to put it. They're dancers, and the Russian... Baryshnikov, he defected from Russia years ago, but during some accident, ends up back in Russia. And they're kind of happy to have him back, but in a way that they don't want to let him go. Helen Mirren is in the film as well, and she's in a few scenes, and she's really good. And... I don't know about you, but I've never really gone back to see Helen Mirren young. And she's kind of hot. And this isn't like full-on young Helen Mirren. This is like, you know, middle-aged. Like, how old is Helen Mirren now? Like, is she like 80 or something?
No. I'm sure she's 60. But, yeah, I remember reading on the internet an article about some guy that came up to her, I guess when she was doing press, and he was like, when you were young, I'd tap that.
No, he said something a bit more expressive.
Yes.
He said something about things he used to do while watching films of her.
I'm sure he mentioned Caligula.
And that movie, White Nights, it's actually a really enjoyable film. And I have to give it to them. Like, all the dance numbers with Berezhnikov. Like, I'm not someone who likes watching dance, especially ballet, but it's really cool. And I kind of liked it. But on the other hand, there is the Criterion film, the one of the considered one of...
Oh, wait, stop. So are you saying that you really like this movie?
I really like White Nights.
All right.
But on the other hand, the other dance movie I watched this week, The Red Shoes, Criterion Collection, considered one of the greatest films of all time, based on the French, I think it's French, ballet, The Red Shoes. I really hated this movie. The only thing that saved it was... There's a, like, I don't know how long it is. I guess it's like 20 minutes because it felt really long. A 20-minute sequence in this, like, 2.5-hour movie where they're actually showing you the ballet, the Red Shoes ballet being performed. And I think everyone should actually watch that sequence because you can learn a lot, especially when it comes to editing, from watching that sequence. The way things come in and out of the scene, the way they splice ideas, like there's this one point where she's like dancing with this newspaper floating in the wind, and then it cuts into a person being dressed in like the newspaper color thing, and when she jumps into the red shoes originally, like, it definitely shows its age, but at the same time, it still never feels wrong. It still never feels like, I never thought to myself watching that those moments asking for this movie to be made today so they could have all of the technology and techniques that they have today to make it better, like more aesthetically pleasing.
Is it weird that when you talk about a newspaper becoming a person dressed in newspapers that I think immediately on another Criterion movie called Brazil?
No, that, even though that did the complete opposite. You definitely can think about that when you go to that specific detail. But otherwise, the whole story of the Red Shoes movie, complete and utter boring. Like, I was actually, like, staring at my watch so much, going, like, how much longer does this movie have? And you know that's when you've lost it. Otherwise, this week, I saw Despicable Me, the new animated film with Steve Carell and... I can't remember his name right now. Dude from How I Met Your Mother. Jason Segel.
That is not just dude from How I Met Your Mother. That's also dude from any Seth Rogen movie. Okay. Get it right. Jason, that's where I know Jason Segel from. Seth Rogen and Judd Apatow.
This movie actually was not as good as I hoped it was. It was kind of fun for the first, like, hour, and I think what really pushed that along was I really liked Jason Segel in it. Steve Carell was just annoying and bothersome. Like, you feel supervillains, mad scientists, they can do crazy things, and they have these, what people were calling the cutest minions ever, but the minions, I just found them stupid and annoying.
That's probably because you didn't know what they were saying. You should have bought that iPhone app.
Well, when I buy an iPhone, I'll buy the iPhone app. actually, I think that app is free, is it?
Whatever.
Anyways.
You can pay me for it.
Totally. I wasn't a huge fan of this film, but at the same time, like, it's okay. If you have children, I'm sure they'll like it. But on the other hand, in a shock turn of events, I also watched Shrek Forever After, which turned out to be a really good film. Like, Shrek, I really like Shrek 1 and 2, but 3 was such shit.
So hold on, what was the shock turn of events? Was it that you liked Shrek 4, or was it that you actually watched Shrek 4?
It was that I liked Shrek 4, and more to the point, I liked Shrek 4 after Shrek 3, and I liked Shrek 4 more than Despicable Me. So there, you have three shocks. shock turn of events.
Okay.
Or I don't know. I think I said that wrong right there. I could just sound it wrong when I heard it. Shrek 4 is actually a good movie. I don't think it's as good as 1 and 2, but it's definitely miles ahead of part 3. And I like the introduction of Rumpelstiltskin, and even when they brought in the Pied Piper, he was a fun character, even though he has no lines of dialogue. It definitely continues to go for the pop culture references and making fun of the fairy tale stuff, but it actually really works in this one. Because they bring you back to the original story of falling in love with Fiona, Shrek and Fiona falling in love, and they just bring it back, and you have Donkey and Puss becoming friends again and stuff like that, because no one knows each other in this fantasy world that they've created.
Wait, what?
In the plot of Shrek 4, what happens is Shrek, like, as, you know the story of Shrek, he's married Fiona and now he has children.
Yeah.
But now he's gotten the whole joke of marriage of people are getting bored of their days even, and they don't know what they have, right? So what happens is Shrek meets Rumpelstiltskin, who we all know from the stories is a dude who makes deals, does magical deals, and he decides to give Rumpelstiltskin a day so he can be a real ogre again, where people are afraid of him, he doesn't have to deal with children anymore and stuff. But then it becomes this huge plot of, oh shit, Rumpelstiltskin did some underhanded thing to him, and he has to win back Fiona.
Oh, but does he remember that he loves Fiona?
No, he knows that, but no one else.
Oh, okay.
It's only just him and Rumpel who knows the truth.
I thought that you were going to tell me that this was Weatherman Part 2.
Weatherman?
Not Weatherman. Sorry. No. I'm still thinking of a bad Nicolas Cage movie. The one with Don Cheadle in the red Ferrari. That one.
Oh, that's Family Man.
See? All his movies even sound the same.
So yeah, that's what I watched this week. I could tell you about Holy Rollers, but that movie, I guess the easiest way to describe it is a good performance from Jesse Eisenberg and perfectly adequate drug movie. With a lot of Jewish things that I never knew about.
I see.
Like, you just hear a lot of Hebrew and you see people do Jewish things and you're like, I think if I was Jewish, I would actually like this movie more.
Okay.
But anyways, that's all I watched this week.
Chances are, 'cause I wear a silly grin the moment you come into view. Chances are you think that I'm in love with you.
This week in trailers. There's not much to talk about this week in trailers. But there was one trailer that came out today. Stars Hugh Jackman and Anthony Mackie.
Rock 'em, suck 'em, robots.
Actually, no, it's called Real Steel.
Oh.
Times have changed. Fighting has changed. But the crowd, they never change.
Our main event tonight features pain!
They just get bigger. The human body can only take so much. But the steel never stops.
That doesn't sound that. No, I want him to change the title. I like Rock 'em, Sock 'em, Robot.
I'm sure they couldn't afford the name. They got Hugh Jackman, man. They got Hugh Jackman. So Douglas, what do you think of this trailer?
I think that this trailer looks fairly bad, but I'm not sure if the movie is going to be bad. It's so horrible because I see the trailer and I know exactly what happened. The producers or the decision makers or the trailer makers, they all said to themselves, we may or may not have a good movie on our hands, but in order to get people to come to our movie, we will just show them fancy pictures of shiny robots, and that's all. We're not going to show you anything else. So that's my my gripe about this trailer. This trailer showed you just the graphics and how pretty this movie looks,
so
but it doesn't really
give you the tip.
Yeah, and I like the whole shaft, please. Or at least a little bit. Give me, you know, don't just tease me like that.
this movie looks horrible. And I think one thing that stands out for me is not only Hugh Jackman just, like, first of all, Anthony Mackie is in this trailer and he plays like a ring announcer. And I've always been a kind of fan of Anthony Mackie. I've seen him in a lot of good films, and I've seen him in a lot of bad films where he's played ridiculous roles, and I still kind of like him. One movie that I know you still haven't watched, and you need to watch it, which I love him in, is Half Nelson.
I have seen the first half of that movie.
Half of Half Nelson?
Yes, I have. I know. And I will give you this, Andrew. I adore it. It was fantastic.
If you like Gosling from other movies,
yeah,
just watch Half Nelson.
Yeah.
It blows
yeah.
everyone out of the water. Anthony Mackie was also in The Hurt Locker last year.
Okay, that was
I
great.
I really loved him in it. I even liked him in the Notorious movie, which was shite, but he, as Tupac, I kind of liked him. And I can see that I'm not going to call on this movie as one of his perfect roles in the end, but he looks like I would find him hilarious from the trailer. And also, Hugh Jackman, I don't know if you got this vibe, but how he's playing this role, this old boxer who's now doing these mechanical fights. The way he's playing it, it kind of reminds me of his character in Swordfish.
I'll tell you the main difference between this and Swordfish. In Swordfish, yes, he was somewhat acclaimed and then fallen off and then came back. But he came back because somebody was forcing him to do it for a one-time thing. This looks as if
No, I'm not talking about the whole arc that we're seeing in the trailer. I'm talking about just generally his tone and his delivery. Like, it reminds me so much of Swordfish.
He was in Swordfish. I don't know. I mean, if you say so, I did not think of Swordfish at all when I saw this trailer.
I say so, therefore it is so. Mm. Even though this movie's going to be bad. It's going to be so bad. And I think it's funny because it came out, like, this trailer came out right after I saw the teaser trailer for Transformers 3.
I still haven't watched that, you know.
Which we're not going to talk about, but I just find it funny because I saw those robots, and then you see these robots, and you're like, these robots don't look finished.
Oh, wow. So you're saying that Transformer robots look way better?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think the thing is that these robots are ridiculously shiny. Like, Transformers robots, they get dirt on them. Anyways, another trailer that came out this week that I want us to talk about is the new film, which is Jodie Foster's directorial debut, starring Mel Gibson and Jodie Foster and Anton Yelchin, The Beaver.
Is Dad gone?
He's not gone, honey. We just agreed that it's better if we don't live together anymore.
I'm glad you kicked him out. What a loser.
This is the story of Walter Black, a hopelessly depressed individual. The successful and loving family man he used to be has gone missing. And no matter what he's tried, Walter can't seem to bring him back.
What's that?
It's a brain. Mom says yours got broken.
So you can see that Walter is a man who's lost all hope. But he's about to find his voice.
Bloody hell. Look at you. I'm sick. Do you want to get better? Who are you? I'm the Beaver, Walter. And I'm here to save your damn life.
So this movie has a problem.
What's that?
Mel Gibson. A lot of people are not going to watch this movie because of that.
I know, and I think that's
kind of
sad.
It really is.
But to tell you the truth, like, I know people have a hard time of separating it, you know, reality and entertainment sometimes, but to be completely honest, I really don't give a shit when it comes to deciding on whether I want to watch a movie or not, when it comes to the guy being like that.
You see,
if the movie is good and he's good in the movie, then good.
I don't want to agree with you. I agree with you, it's very hard to separate those two. And also, I mean, if you feel that, you know, somebody has done something that is, you know, completely it should not be supported, and that, you know, what he's been doing lately, then I hear your argument.
So are you still going to watch Polanski films?
Hold on, man. I did watch a Polanski film, and I didn't like it. It was rubbish. But, what was I saying? Yeah, I don't know. I have to say that personally, I love Mel Gibson in most of his movies that I've seen. You know, The Patriot's fantastic, Lethal Weapon, even some of his movies that were supposed to be crap, like What Women Want. I love What Women Want. I think that movie is,
you know,
so good.
Up until now, I still haven't seen all that movie. I've seen the first like half hour of it or something.
It's just so,
I know how we get there.
Yeah.
I just don't know
Andrew, it's just,
I know I can predict
it's just so fun. It's predictable. It's run of the mill. It's cliche. But guess what? At the end of the day, I am entertained and I get my money's worth. And he is spot on. That's the thing about this guy. He clearly is, you know, crazy.
He's a professional.
But he is, yes, he's a professional, and he's a great actor. And, you know, no matter how many blockbuster hits, because this guy has had quite a few, he clearly, even though he is doing all of these popcorn stuff, he's bringing that to that popcorn. He's bringing real, I don't know, he's bringing just real acting, he's making it almost like an art of popcorn. I don't know, but so it's hard. Exactly, it's hard. I don't want to disagree with people who will not watch, because I fully understand anybody's stance to say I will not watch anything from this guy because he's such a horrible person, if that's what you believe. I can't disagree with anybody who's like you is saying, you know, professional, personal, I just want to get entertained. But, you know, it's a hard
thing to say. Like, I mean, it's one thing if his character or his films were being what he is in real life. Because then I'd be like, then I just don't want to see that.
Well, no, you see, the point that people are making is that if you watch his movies, he earns money and then is able to comfortably do what he's doing. And feels no repercussions.
Is,
I don't know.
Is wrong, like completely wrong. He would be in jail, or he would be suffering some financial loss. And I'm sure, like industry-wise, he is suffering a financial loss because his quota is probably gone down due to his PR.
Well, no, I'm sure it has, but
has gone down over the Scientology shit.
Uh huh.
Because he's earning a ton less on the new MI film than he has in any other.
Mm-hmm.
Because he used to get a ton of deals about the back end, the net profits and stuff, the gross, and any merchandising. He's not getting any of that from the new MI film. And that's what happens. So he is suffering somewhat because of what he's done.
There's a difference, though, between, you know, getting 10 million instead of 20 and not getting any money at all.
Then if whatever.
No, I shouldn't really be pressing the point, but it's just I understand, you know, and I can't.
Like there are no repercussions for what he's done, is what I'm saying. And anyways, when it comes to his trailer though.
Okay, yes, we were talking about this trailer, weren't we?
We somehow just got skewed off on
Melons. Yeah, so this trailer, it looks bad. I like Jodie Foster, who surprised me when I saw her in A Very Long Engagement, Miss I Speak French Fluently, and I'm in awesome movies with awesome French people. I really like, as I said before, Mel Gibson. I really like Anton Yelchin. And it just... I don't... These three things, these three factors come together and make me want to watch this movie. They make me want to love this movie. But the trailer just doesn't show me anything that I feel... I should watch. It feels like, you know what it feels like? It feels like a kid's movie. It feels like that Tim Allen movie about dogs. Was it Tim Allen with Robert Downey Jr. as well? And Tim Allen gets bit and he turns into a dog. Yes, he was. He was like some sort of boss or something like that in his workplace. It seems to me like that, where, you know, he uses this adversity that he has been given. In the dog movie, it was him being a dog, but in this one, clearly it's his beaver that he's using to now all of a sudden become great again, even though he's still crazy or he still has his affliction. And then in the end, hopefully there will be some sort of getting better or motion towards getting better, but that may occur because, you know, he loses it all again or some bullshit like that. I don't know. It seems like a cut and paste kids movie almost. But I know it's not gonna be a kids movie, but I guess it would be just in that realm of cliche stories.
The first time I saw this trailer, I was actually kind of impressed by it. Because, to be honest, I was looking forward to it because I just heard about the idea alone. You know, Mel Gibson, he goes crazy and he finds his puppet beaver and he starts to talk to people through it, and that's how he gets through his craziness. And especially with all the things that personally was going on with Mel Gibson, it sounded like just something that made fun of him at the same time. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, yeah, this looks kind of fun. And then I watched it again and I realized, wait, this isn't a comedy.
No, it's not. It's not. That's the beautiful thing about this trailer. It lies to you for a second. You watch it and you're like, wait, this kind of looks like it could be a comedy. No, it's not a comedy.
It's not even a dark comedy where they're not trying to give you time to laugh at the movie. Like, it's a strict drama, and therein lies its problem. Like, You look at the idea of this guy losing a screw and then having to talk to people through this beaver, and you ask yourself, the first time my boss comes up to me with a beaver in my face and starts to put on an Australian accent saying that he's the beaver, what would I do? And the response I come up with immediately is I tell him to fuck himself. And I'd find a new job immediately. Because I'm not taking orders from a crazy man or a beaver. Whichever one you want to call it. And the idea alone just... No, like, put him in therapy and have, like, multiple sessions of him crying and I'll watch that. But give him a beaver to fix things with his family, his job, and his general life? No, it just seems stupid.
Yes, I agree.
Anyways, I think that's all the trailers we have this week. Is there anything else that we should talk about?
No, not that I can think of offhand.
Okay,
first month's down, we'll call it a day, all right? It's hard coming up with all that money, isn't it?
It's gonna work out.
You're not the one with $84 in her bank account, and I checked her right on Monday.
You know what you should do.
Hi, I'm calling in regards to the babysitter flyer posted outside my dorm.
Tonight's big eclipse is now well underway.
You know, we're just dropping you out here in the middle of wherever we are.
This week, we watched The House of the Devil. the latest film from Ty West. The film starring Jocelyn Donahue and Greta Gerwig, Tom Noonan, and Larry Woronov. Douglas, you recommended this film. Tell people what it's about.
Okay, so this is a movie made in 2009, but based or set in the 70s. It's about... Okay,
in
so
the 80s.
80s? Oh, sorry. That's interesting. Okay, so it's set in the 80s. And it's about this girl who needs a little bit of money because she really wants to leave her dorm on
her
campus.
Sex-filled dorm.
Exactly. She's got a little bit of some sexual problems going on with her roommate. So she found an apartment that costs $300 a month. But guess what? She don't have no money. She has, I believe she said it, something along the lines of $84 in her bank account to her name. So clearly this woman needs $220 more.
And I don't think she's going down to the corner to...
Yeah, she's not the dancing type. I don't think so. Greta, yeah, but... no. So she needs a lot of money. And she gets an opportunity to get this money because she comes across a babysitter poster. And the person says, yeah, I'll pay you $50 a night. And she thinks to herself, well, at least it's something. Exactly. And she gets there. She finally gets to this place. And it gets explained to her that really she's not babysitting. She's old person sitting. And so the $50... Exactly. The $50 changes to $400. And somebody gets interested because that's... the first month's rent.
And as some actors I've heard say, that the employer has made it financially irresponsible for you to say no.
Exactly. So
I think
that's
my favorite part of listening to the Kevin Pollak chat show, because every time he talks about, like, when he's done a bad movie, he's like, I knew it was bad, but the dude made it financially irresponsible for me to say no.
I like the way that you put it, Andrew. So that is really the setup to this film, and then it becomes a horror. I don't even want to call it a horror. I guess it is, because people die and blood is spilled.
It's a horror movie.
But it just doesn't feel...
It's creepy for most of the film, and then
Right. It's one of those. It's almost like Unforgiven, in that there's a lot of build up to one final scene, and there is, yes, there is a little bit in the middle, but it's quick and
painless.
Yes, or I hope it's painless. Okay, so the funny thing about this movie is, and I've read this before, a lot of people say that it's really slow and it takes long to get to the point. And the truth of the matter is, all of that setup that I gave you a while ago, up until the point that it becomes financially irresponsible for her to say no, that is probably half of the movie. I think so.
It's about 40 minutes. Around the first... and then a lot of in the house build-up is for around 40 more minutes.
Yeah, but that's... So there's a lot of build-up. Mm-hmm. Most of this movie is build-up.
Mm-hmm.
And, I actually don't have a problem with that. I think, yes, maybe it could have been paced a little bit better. But I don't want to say I really enjoyed this movie, but I thought it was pretty decent. It was okay. I loved the way that Ty West made this film look so much like a movie from that time, like a horror movie from that time. All of the angles were right. The
lighting.
The lighting was perfect. By the way, I love not just the lighting of the movie itself, but I love the news on the television, the way that looked, with the horribly bright lights on the guys.
I was watching a bit of Anchorman this week.
Yeah.
And it just reminded me of, when you saw those news, it reminded me of Anchorman with Ron Burgundy.
Ron Burgundy. I remember hating that movie.
Watch it again.
I'm sure I'll watch it again and I love it because I kind of gotten into that whole Will Ferrell humor lately.
Especially with Adam McKay.
Oh, yeah. But Yes, I mean, like, especially the opening sequence, and that's where it really gets you. It's essentially make or break of this film. If you don't like the first 5 minutes, you're not going to like this movie. The first 5 minutes are... It's just like a movie from the 80s. You've got all the credits going. You've got the camera kind of looking up at her, and then a pause as she puts on her glove, and the title sequence is going, and a pause while she stops when she's walking, and then the name of a couple actors come up, and it's just... It's very 70s-esque. Exactly. Even the font and the colors, the yellow color to the text on top of the blue sky, or all of that. I mean, it's all you need is a couple jump cuts, a couple hairs on the lens, and this could have been on the Grindhouse DVD. It's fantastic. I loved that whole immersion into what was 70s and 80s slashers or horror movies. I don't know if... I guess this is a little bit of a slasher, but it's weird. I really appreciate this film, and I think it's a good film, but at the same time I understand why some people may not like it. It's a bit slow. It takes a while to get to the payoff, but when it does, it pays off a little bit. Except, and I know you're going to chime in on this, the ending was a bit haphazard. It was a bit weak, but all in all, I think this movie is a good 7.5.
I agree with around 90% of what you said. You're pretty spot on it with a lot of the problems this film has and a lot of the things that it has going for it. Like, I remember when we saw the trailer for this and you were like jumping over it, and I was making fun of it. I'm like, that dude looks like he's George Carlin, and who's this? This is a weird horror film. It looks stupid, and I don't know who Ty West is. I'm still not sure. I have to look up what other films he's done, if any. But I really liked how he tackled this movie, because it really does go back to that time. It actually, like, the whole plot of it reminds me a lot of Roman Polanski's film Rosemary's Baby, in that there's this thing going on and you can't really tell what's happening, and then boom, this happens. Even though Rosemary's Baby was a bit more freaky about it, because in Rosemary's Baby, if you don't know...
I've never watched that movie.
But you've never heard of... You don't know about...
I know the name, but I don't know anything else.
The whole thing is that they... She's living beside these neighbors who are, like, all nice and awesome, but she realizes a lot of freaky things about them as they're going on. And she remembers having this weird-ass dream where she feels she's being raped by this gorilla or something, and she's pregnant the next day, and no, the husband is like, no, we had sex a couple of days ago, remember? And she's like, oh, okay, I'm pregnant with a regular baby. And all sorts of weird shit happens, and then boom, the end happens, and you're like, oh, that happened. And it's really freaky in that sense, in that you really are toying with yourself as to what really occurred and what's a dream and what's not, and how these people are doing this to her. And I feel like that's what this movie was reaching for but didn't make it, which is why the ending just fumbled it all, in that it did so well with the tension building and the setup of what was a crazy scenario that you knew was going to go insane. Even from the title of the film, you're like, okay, something... We're going to find that this grandmother that she's taking care of is kind of weird and kind of worshipping someone other than Jesus. and it works in that sense. But when you finally get to the end and you realize how horribly they handle it, like, I don't know whether it's that they didn't have enough film to finish the movie or or what, but from the moment we find out that what the grandmother really is, and we are upstairs, or is it downstairs? It's upstairs. The movie just felt a waste to me. Like, not even the exact ending, which I'm sure is what really ruined it for you. But from that point onwards, like, it just became, let's kill all these people and be done with it. And I didn't really like that. It felt rushed. and that's what my biggest problem with the film. I love Greta Gerwig in this movie. And that scene with her and Bear Dude, that's a fantastic moment. That's
my favorite scene in a movie.
And the music, it definitely feels like it could have been a Grindhouse movie. But at the same time, especially since I recently watched Halloween for the first time, it feels like it definitely is one of those movies that was from then. That if we were here critiquing films in the 80s, 70s, we would be saying about how this is groundbreaking. But today, in 2010, we're watching this movie and we're going like, yup, that's definitely the shit they used to do then. Back when cameras couldn't do craziness and we had to do graphics in frame and crazy shit like children walk around with knives in houses for no reason. And you're like, when does she go topless? So yeah.
That never happened, by the way. I was very disappointed.
It's unlike most horror films.
Yes.
I'd give it a solid 7. A solid 7. So for people where the ending works, you're gonna love this film. For people who just don't get it, they're not gonna. And for the rest of you, you're gonna be like me and go like, I appreciate it, but there are things I didn't like.
This is true. By the way, speaking of music in a movie, I have to say, going back to what we were talking about way, way long ago, I really, really love the music in I Love You, Philip Morris. Especially that one title song that gets played over and over. I love it.
I just love My Word Is My Bond. And the song that plays during that moment.
Here, the heavens have opened.
I was hoping to check in.
Check in? But you've always been here.
Excuse me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were my husband. You must be Sergeant Angel.
Yes, I am.
I'm Joyce Cooper. I trust you had a pleasant trip. Fascist.
I beg your pardon.
System of government characterized by extreme dictatorship. 7 across.
Oh, I see. It's fascism.
Fascism. Wonderful. Now, we've put you in the castle suite. Bernard will escort you up there.
Well, actually, I could probably make my own way up. Hag.
I beg your pardon.
Evil old woman considered frightful or ugly. It's 12 down.
Oh! Bless you.
Alright, so this week I was thinking what might be interesting for us to talk about in a tie-in into the film we were talking about earlier is genre filmmaking. Ty West, he definitely reached for it, as we mentioned, into the 80s horror. He definitely hit that mark perfectly when it came to making that feel in the movie. And there's so many people today, including the Grindhouse, there's so many films which are going for the Grindhouse feel. After Grindhouse came out, we got Machete, which was a film based on a trailer, a fake trailer during the Grindhouse movies. I can't remember who, but one of the studios just picked up Hobo with a Shotgun for release.
Yeah, and there have been rumors about Thanksgiving actually being made. Yeah.
And even that clown movie, that fake trailer for some clown movie, Eli Roth wants to make it into a real film. And I mean, even one of my favorite directors, Edgar Wright, he's all about genre filmmaking. He makes movies which critique and at the same time enter a genre. He's made Shaun of the Dead, which is zombies, Hot Fuzz, which is buddy cop movies, and action-packed films, and even Scott Pilgrim, which is a video game movie. What do you think about genre filmmaking? Is it something you like, hate? What's your favorite?
I like it.
Is this your way of telling me to stop the recording now?
Well, I mean, I feel like I don't have much to say on the topic, but I like a lot of the films that you're talking about. I love Edgar Wright. He's one of my favorite directors. He's a funny man's director, is what he is. I loved Grindhouse, no matter how many of you bitches think that Death Proof is a horrible movie. Screw that. Death Proof is awesome, as is Planet Terror. Both of them together are a work of art. I feel that all of Quentin Tarantino movies are genre films in a sense. I mean, all of them are it's a critique that a lot of people make of him, that none of his movies, no matter how much he writes them, produces them, and directs them, are actually his, because most of them are really some huge homage to something else. And I feel that that's true. He's like the Apple of filmmaking, Andrew. He does what a lot of people are doing, but does it his way and does it well. That's kind of what Apple does. Apple, the iPod wasn't anything spectacular. There were all sorts of MP3 players, but it had an awesome little interface, and that's what made the iPod awesome. The same thing with the iPad, the same thing with almost anything that those guys have done. The iPhone, it's just, you know, I know that this can be done, I just can do it better. And that's what Tarantino does a lot.
I'm trying to remember this quote. Tarantino said this about critics. He was saying, you know, to all those people who keeps criticizing him about, oh, why don't you stop stealing shit from other movies? He's like, well, I read this somewhere.
Yeah, but what basically did he say? Paraphrase for me.
Basically, he went on to say that, yeah, all those critics who are criticizing me, just to let you know, I know these films that you're talking about way better than you do, and I write about them, and I quote-unquote steal from them, not just because I can't write better, but because I love them. And that's why.
Well, that's first of all,
a lot more, yeah. You said it a lot more eloquent than that.
Yeah, but guess what? First of all, eloquent is not a word I associate with Mr. Tarantino. Second of all, that's a reason or an excuse, not a defense to say that he doesn't do what people say he does. And third, I'm fine with it. I like almost every... No, scratch that. I love almost every Quentin Tarantino movie ever made, Andrew. I'm not putting him down for it. He, like I say, he does what he does, and he does it well. And, I mean, I have problems with, say, Jackie Brown. But other than that, I love his stuff. And I actually enjoy the fact that I look at these movies and I'm like, oh, that reminds me of this, but it's got a little twist to it, you know? It's not just vanilla. It's not just what was before. It's what was before with what could be later on, and what, I guess, is, because he's doing it. And that is what, I guess, genre filmmaking needs to be. It can't just be an homage because you want to do an homage. It has to be, and why am I pronouncing it that way? God damn it, it's a homage. But it needs to be something, there needs to be something fresh added in the mix. Edgar Wright does it all the time. You see it in his jump cuts, and, well, he relies a lot on the funny men in the movie, but it's, you see, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying. But there's a something fresh about what Edgar Wright does, about what Quentin Tarantino does. And off the top of my head, those are the two most prominent figures, the most prominent names that I can think of right now. I guess Ty West is another. But yeah, I mean, I have no problems with genre movies at all. I love good genre movies that don't just pander, that don't just stay in 1970 or in blaxploitation or whatever it is, but who branch out from their roots and show you that, hey, I am a unique and significant addition, you know?
I just can't. This quote is just—it's
eluding you.
It's hurting me. I know I've read it somewhere. It must be on someone's Facebook profile where I read it for the first time, and I was like, "Holy shit, that sounds so awesome!" But anyways, you mentioned Edgar Wright. You mentioned Quentin Tarantino. I actually, when I started thinking about this, I didn't think of Tarantino as one of those, but he definitely is one of those who makes genre films. He doesn't do it in the same vein that Edgar Wright does it, where Edgar Wright is spoofing it while doing it. Quentin, on the other hand, creates a film and it definitely comments on the genre, but at the same time it feels less hilarious about it, it feels less comical about it. You have things like Kill Bill is definitely one of those where the first one is a western, the first one is a kung fu film and the second one is a western film, and it plays perfectly into those genres. You have in the first one, you have the crazy 88s and Johnny Moo, and you have that huge sequence where she is killing all of these Japanese gangster henchmen. And even when we get to the second film, even though you have that huge flashback to Pai Mei, which is a big kicker thing, it still plays into the Western themes, which is what I loved about it. After Quentin Tarantino, there are not many, like, modern directors who are doing what these guys are doing. And I know who I was thinking of who might just come into this conversation of genre directors, and it's Jody Hill. He, with Observe and Report, did this crazy ass idea of a cop film without a cop. The vigilante, even though he's just this guy who's trying to save shouldn't really say save this girl, because he's not saving her, he's just trying to get this girl. And I don't know if you actually finished watching that film, did you?
Yes, I've watched all of that movie.
There's a really uncomfortable sex scene in that movie.
Why'd you stop?
But, I mean, the whole thing is predicated around the idea of this guy who's flashing himself at the mall, and Seth Rogen's character wants to save this woman from this distress she got from seeing this guy's penis. And it's an insane comedy, which I think seats itself in the cop genre a bit. And, I mean, you can go back, even though a film I didn't really like that much, Foot Fist Way.
Was that Jody Hill as well?
That's Jody Hill.
I haven't watched that one, though.
With Danny McBride, which is a huge spoof comedy on, like, kung fu stuff, and it has the whole Eastbound and Down, sensibility to it. But personally, I just didn't like the main character that much. Eastbound and Down, the TV series he created, it's a huge fuck you to, like, any sports film you've ever seen. And I really like it for that, because it gives you a character who is not likable at all. It's all about me, which is what I think most sports people are in the truest sense. And especially because it's about this character who, even though he had his time in the limelight, I think even if his personality wasn't a big issue, he would have burned out really quickly. And he just can't take... He just can't see that. He's just like, I'm the biggest shit ever, and...
So you know my take on that show, right?
Yeah,
that I really don't like the show. But I have to give him this. He wears that character well.
Danny McBride.
Yeah, Danny McBride.
Anyways, I think that's all I have to say on films. Do you have anything else to add to this?
Not much.
We definitely pulled this conversation out of our ass.
That we did. So you did, sir. You haven't told... It's hilarious. So, just to let all of you guys out there that listen to this show know, Andrew, up until 5 minutes before the podcast, I asked him, I said, Andrew, what we're talking about today? He says to me, I don't know. I saw him right as he was segueing from the main review into this, and he started talking, and it was very disjointed. I don't know if he might edit that out, because, you know, maybe he doesn't want you to realize that. And he'll probably edit this out as well, because he doesn't want you to hear this either. But he started, you know, with a couple ideas on what maybe he could, you know, you heard the, and then a stop, and then and then, you know, he stopped and started. And then I saw a light go off in his eyes, and he said, I know what I'm going to talk about. Right? And then you heard him. You heard what he said. He made it sound as if, oh, we've been thinking about talking about this for ages. No, he did not. No, he pulled that right out of his ass, and then I had to talk out of my ass. I was the first person to talk, Andrew. I can't believe I had so much to say.
Actually, I have to say, just everyone know, the reason why I went so long with the introduction was so Douglas could figure out exactly what the topic was and give him enough time to think of what to say. I put so much content into that introduction that Douglas should have gotten a hint as to where we were going, and he would have just been able to pick up and go.
That was exactly what I was doing. I was like, okay, genre films, in what way, Andrew? Thankfully, you didn't need me to ask you those questions. I was like, what are you saying?
Which was awesome. So I'd like you to thank me right now. Come on.
Fuck you. I wish that there was a way. You should add this in post. Right after that, you hear like feedback, you know, and then just plop. It just falls on the ground as I walk away and leave. I want you to put that in.
Anyways, with that, we can say goodnight. This is Andrew.
And this is Douglas.
You can find me at gmanreviews.com, as well as you can find my column in the Jamaica Gleaner on a Saturday. You can find that at jamaicagleaner.com if you don't happen to live in Jamaica and buy the Gleaner. Gmanreviews.com is where the podcast is at. You can find it on iTunes as well as Podcast Alley. And you can find me on Twitter at gmanreviews, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/gmanreviews. We have like 110 people on that page now.
That's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Douglas, can they find you anywhere?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at DJR Lost His Name. That's about it. There's G-Man Reviews if you go back maybe 3 years.
Which is when the site began. I tell you. Great track record. Anyways, before we go, I'd like to give a shout out to Marco Sergios. He's our San Francisco correspondent. He has been throwing me a lot of content this week, a few interviews, so a couple editorials. I really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys do too. He's Big Dumb Mail on Twitter, and he writes all over the place, so I can't really claim any one place. He writes for a showing sometimes. Hopefully he has some stuff going up there soon. Anyways, Marco, thank you a lot, and I guess at this point is good night, and thanks for listening.